Daniel Knott, MD, discusses options and care in facial paralysis. Dr. Knott is professor and director, Division of Facial Plastic and Reconstructive Surgery at the University of California, San Francisco Medical Center. He was recorded at UCSF Otolaryngology Update 2019, presented by the University of California, San Francisco Office of Continuing Medical Education. Dr. Knott.
Three main categories of patients that I see with facial paralysis that I think makes up anybody's practice in general otolaryngology, and that is paralysis resulting from lateral skull-based surgery, aka flaccid facial paralysis, idiopathic facial palsy, aka post-paralytic facial palsy or facial paralysis, and then paralysis resulting from radical parotidectomy. It's striking to me the number of patients that I see in my practice every day that say, yeah, doctor, I had paralysis for 30 years. No one ever said I could do anything for this. A neurologist or laryngologist, general practitioners. So the take-home message today should be there are things that anybody can do for any case of facial paralysis. So to start with, we'll talk about lateral skull base surgery. So the traditional approach has been to use 12 sevens. And the hypoglossal nerve is a very nice, robust nerve that can be used, but really we hardly use it anymore. We've all gone to using the nerve to masseter for a variety of reasons. Number one is, well, telling patients to wait a year, come back in a year, we'll see how good your function is, and then we'll reanimate you. Well, that is no longer the case. I made a commentary in our facial plastic journal about happy birthday facial nerve, meaning we can save a full year with facial nerve treatment. Why? Because for skull-based surgery, a study out of Johns Hopkins showed that by 6 months, not 12, you can have no result or no function with facial paralysis following skull-based surgery is predictable 97% of the time with lack of recovery at 12 months. So what you do is you take the person to surgery and you try to stimulate the nerve electrically before you section it or do nerve transpositions. If you have no motion at all at 6 months, either a clinical exam or in the OR, then you can go ahead and proceed with reinnervation. It saves them 6 months of time. Secondly, you use the masseter nerve instead of the hypoglossal, and that actually, the masseter nerve will give you function starting at an average of 5.6 months after the transposition. So the patients can actually start having mobility again about a year following the onset of the paralysis. And the benefit is if you intervene in that first 6 months, you get an ultimate Hausbrachmann grade 3 versus a grade 5 if you do nothing to these patients. So how do you use the nerve to masseter? Well, it's not that complicated. The landmark is 3 centimeters anterior to the tragus, 1 centimeter below the zygomatic arch. You simply dig in there, you find your buccal and zygomatic branches of your facial nerve, you get them out of the way, you start digging through the muscle, and you can find this nerve to masseter. It's a robust nerve, has about 5 times the number of axons that one of these facial nerve branches have next to it. You simply divide it deep in the masseter. You then flip it up, so the cut end is right here, and then you decide which nerve branch you want to attach to it to reinnervate. I use a little nerve stimulator, and I stimulate the different branches to see what gives me the best smile function with the least orbicularis firing, and then I'll do a direct anastomosis to that branch. You can access this via a facelift approach, so aesthetically it's very pleasing, where the nerve to masseter and the buccal or zygomatic branches are shockingly close together. And so usually you can get an easy tension-free anastomosis right in that masseter muscle. And then you save a little branch to the masseter so you don't lose tone. This was a young girl, I think she's 12 years old. We were following her for a year to see if she was going to recover. We were doing medical treatment for an AVM of the facial nerve. Got no recovery. This is 4 months. Kids recover really quickly. 4 months after a single super selective buccal to the masseter nerve reanastomosis with complete flaccid right-sided facial paralysis. Tone looks pretty good in these young kids, so it's hard to assess tone at this point. 4 months after her surgery. Now, to smile using the hypoglossal nerve, you'd have to actually push your tongue. It's a very strange motion. Using the masseter nerve, you just bite down. And biting down is a much more natural motion to smile than pushing your tongue against your teeth. And so they have to actually bite down when they smile. And then they can actually get really nice excursion. The masseter gives you great excursion, doesn't give you as good tone. This is a patient who had a translab approach to a vestibular schwannoma. Saw me also at about 9 months after surgery. Complete left-sided facial paralysis. Older patients have more issues with ectropion and corneal exposure. And this is 2 years after doing my masseter nerve transposition. Again, they have to do some physical therapy. They have to learn to bite down when they want to smile. And they have to make that part of their meaningful motion of the face. But the masseter nerve is so robust that even patients in advanced years can get motion from this. It's not just for young patients. So if your patients don't have function after this kind of surgery, make sure that you have them see somebody who can do this procedure within 6 months or a year, year and a half at most after the onset of paralysis. Because of the lack of tone of the masseter, we don't use it to get resting symmetry. This was a young woman who was a beauty queen who suffered a ruptured aneurysm and came to see me from LA. And so she had complete flaccid paralysis of 6 years duration. So she was outside the window of reinnervation. That window was around 18 months to 2 years. Gracilis free flap. I did a platinum chain, I did a tarsal strip, and I use fascia lata to maintain the resting tone. My goal is to get the oral commissures about equal at rest. And that way she can move around normally, and then when she bites down, she gets smile. So this is how you do your gracilis flaps, is you use the nerve to masseter to power your gracilis. Some of these things that I find are very helpful for my facial paralysis patients. One of them is this checkpoint nerve stimulator. It uses direct current so it doesn't fatigue the nerves. So you can repetitively target the nerves. And then you can adjust the amplitude and the frequency of the signal being sent. So that if you're going to do a revision case, you don't know where a nerve is, you can turn it up high and start to push through the tissue. The signal will go through about a centimeter of tissue. So you can begin, as you get closer to a nerve, you can begin to assess how close you are. And then you can turn it way down and assess actually nerve function. I find this is very much better than a typical press probe used for surgery. This is a gracilis flap. We carefully measure these, we carefully mark them, we try to get just the right resting symmetry using this checkpoint nerve stimulator on the muscle to see how much contracture you can get with it. And again, you can do this 100 times and it shouldn't fatigue the muscle or the nerve. Then when we place our gracilis flaps for the flaccid facial paralysis, we go ahead and once again use our checkpoint nerve stimulator. You can actually assess the vector of the smile. And if we carefully mark the contralateral side where the vector is, and so that you can actually test to make sure that your motion is correct, your vector is correct, the smile morphology will be correct. I find this to be very helpful. A thing that I think is very simple is weighting procedures. This is a nice way to use to do a simple procedure to really help your patients. I use platinum chains. Some people recommend using a single thin platinum implant without the little hinges. This is placed through an upper lid bleph incision. You can make a long scar. It does not need to be fancy because the incision is hidden in the supertarsal crease. There's no need to make a small incision. And you simply place the chain up against the tarsal plate. I put mine kind of low so that way they get full eye closure at nighttime, which I think is very important. Double set moisture chamber eye patch. I always found it difficult to recommend things for my patients to use for eye protection at night. And recommending saran wrap with Vaseline or recommending an eye patch was always, I think, kind of hard. This is a thing that's easily available on the internet. It's reusable and it fits right over the eye. It's like a built-in moisture chamber. I also frequently do tarsal strips. And this is another simple procedure you can do in the office with a little bit of local and a little bit of numbing eye drops to the eye to make the eye numb. You just do a simple lateral canthotomy. You take off a little bit of skin that you're going to bury under the lateral sidewall of the orbit. I cauterize a little bit of the conjunctiva at the corner. I use one of these little high-temp probe, battery-powered cauteries. You can use a hyphricator. You can use even a blade and just cut off a little bit of that mucosa. It doesn't bleed that much if you use adequate local with epinephrine. I place one single 4-0 PDS stitch because I don't want the stitch to be there permanently. By the time the scar is developed, it doesn't need the stitch anymore, and you have to implant it deep and against the medial wall of the lateral orbital rim. This is an easy procedure that really helps your patients tremendously. So shifting over, I want to talk about post-paralysis facial palsy, which I think is a nice term for this. People in the lay world usually call this Bell's palsy. I think this nicely demonstrates the issues that we face with these patients because they did have paralysis that recovered. They're the 5% of Bell's patients who haven't gotten full recovery. So the trouble with these patients is the synkinetic hypertonicity of the face or a mass movement. And they have a lot of treatment options. And these are among the patients I see that most frequently say that nothing is offered to them. Most of the patients that I see to treat for this are women, but I see some men too. And the real issue is one of increased resting tone of the muscles and then decreased motion of those muscles. So if you want to treat this appropriately, you have to realize what the situation is and how to address this. So, woman with Horner syndrome, and what was the difference that I did on her? What did I do to get that eye to open up so widely? I use phenylephrine eye drops. So I stimulate Mueller's muscle. It's a sympathomimetic eye drop, and it just raises the eyelid right up. So the same concept that you can use for Horner syndrome, you can use for your post-paralytic facial palsy patients. Also, I told her, please open your eyes and look at the difference. She had had that narrowed eye for 40 years, and no one had ever told her there was anything she could do about it. I put in these simple eye drops, and then she can open her eye. Well, she can't use this daily, but I do this just to see if I can get that resting tone issue to be resolved a little bit, to raise and open the palpebral fissure a little bit to make her look more normal. If they improve with the phenylephrine eye drops, then I put them on apraclonidine drops at home. I usually start with a 0.5% every 6 hours as needed. Oftentimes, the eye fatigues over the course of the day and the lid drops at night or the social activities are going on in the evening, so then I recommend they put them in before they go out at night. If it's ineffective, I increase it to the 1% apraclonidine drops. People love this. It really works well for your patients. On top of that, there's been a really nice evolution in our treatment of Botox. And Botox is a miracle drug for your post-paralytic facial palsy patients. I frequently see the patients trying to smile. The normal side has the commissure angling upward. The post-paralytic facial palsy side is angling downward. And so you get this funny sigmoid shape of the mouth. A little bit of Botox to the ipsilateral depressor anguli oris will weaken that muscle, allow the tug of war from your lip elevators to win. It will yank that commissure up and give them a much more symmetric smile. It's a difference of maybe 3 millimeters, but what a world of difference this makes for your patients to look normal. So this is 5 units of Botox into the DAO. So what do I see? With my post-paralytic facial palsy patients, I see varied brow positions. Sometimes it's been pulled up, sometimes it's low, so I adjust what I do depending upon the resting position of the brow. I want to treat that narrowed palpebral fissure. They all look like they're squinting in the affected eye. If you're not sure which side is affected, just look at the eye. The eye always tells you. The eye is always narrowed on the post-paralytic palsy side. They tend to have this big full cheek because they have a little bit of recurrent spasming on that side, and the recurrent activity of those muscles lead that side to be a little bit hypertrophic. So they always have a bit of a full cheek on the affected side. The chin dimples, they have a tense platysma, oftentimes a complaint of neck pain. Their smile looks somehow tightened, and the buccinator is hypertonic. And then I have them smile. So if they smile, you see that the depressor labii inferioris pulls the body of the lip down on the normal side, and it yanks the contralateral affected side up, so their smile looks off, like a classic Marge paralysis. You say, show me your teeth, and this just gets worse. So how do you balance the lip? So Botox is a miracle drug for balancing these smiles. So I do a lot of Botox for these patients. certain areas I always treat. I always treat the inferior orbicularis, unless they're really old and they really have lax lower canthi. If the canthus is super lax, then don't do this. Otherwise, I do 2 units and 2 units, so 4 total here. I always do the crow's feet because it makes them look nicer and it also reduces a little bit of the resting tone of the orbicularis. This opens the palpebral fissure a little bit. I always do the ipsilateral depressor anguli oris. This allows this corner of the mouth to raise more when they smile. I always treat the mentalis, and I always treat the normal-sided depressor labii inferioris. That way the smile is not as asymmetric when they smile. I frequently treat the normal-sided frontalis to balance the brow position. And I frequently treat the affected platysma because they get this real tightness and banding on the affected side. And occasionally, if they have a lot of asymmetry at the corrugators, I do that. And if they want to look really nice, I'll do both a lateral crow's feet. It's a lot of Botox. Sometimes it's 70 units, sometimes it's 50 units. It depends for everybody. But this sets them up for 3 or 4 months of looking pretty darn good at rest and with motion. It's really a life changer for these patients. And now to my last topic, which is radical parotidectomy. So for this effect of these advanced cancers, I don't oftentimes like to do only neural reinnervations because that takes a year to start working, as we discussed sometimes, or 6 months, and I want an immediate effect. And sometimes the soft tissue gravity is so much that I need to do something more aggressive, so I do a lot of temporalis tendon transfers. We looked at our results here at UCSF. We looked at about 30 of our patients that had had temporalis tendon transfers, and we found a 3 millimeter increase in static position, 4 millimeter increase in active vertical dimension, and 5 millimeter increase in active horizontal position. What does that mean? Well, it means that the patients at rest look symmetric. And the nice thing about the temporalis tendon transfers are these effects are permanent. A lot of static slings will fail over 2 years. But this is actually muscle that scars in and is a permanent fix for asymmetry. And then when they smile, you get motion. Not a lot, but you get a little bit of motion, which is really helpful. What about the contour issues? Well, if you use muscle for contour problems, the muscle invariably atrophies, so you lose contour. And so I like to use fat. We use vascularized adipofascial flaps from the thigh, and these adipose fat flaps, you can contour precisely to get the contour right. And then we found following our patients up to 40, 60 months after surgery, we found that the volume on these patients with vascularized fat, in spite of radiation treatments, was almost perfectly stable on average. It just tracked individual patients' BMI scores. So vascularized fat resists the radiation effects and atrophy. So we like to use this vascularized fat for all of our cases. We do an ALT flap, the morbidity is very low, we de-epithelialize it, we recontour the defects with the vascularized fat, and then they can be radiated afterwards without problem. We also found there was this nice nerve we found commonly during our ALT flap harvests. This nerve is called the motor nerve to the vastus lateralis. It's a redundant motor nerve. We would cut it, we would save it, patients would walk normally. So we did the study on the morphology of this nerve. It's hard to sew multiple nerve grafts to a facial nerve stump. But with this nerve, you can imagine the side branching patterns you can use if you want to reanimate somebody. So the masseter nerve, I will still frequently do this on a radical parotids if I have enough nerve length. I will do a selective reinnervation to the zygomatic branches, and then I'll use my motor nerve to go to other branches just to give tone. A young woman, 9 months after surgery, I did a brow lift, platinum chain, tarsal strip, adipofascial ALT for contour, masseter to facial nerve selective to the buccal branch, and then I do the motor nerve graft as a cable to the facial nerve stump. It's not perfect, but it gives them good contour, supports the ear, gives them enough resting tone that they can walk around normally, and it's not perfect, but it's pretty close and pretty easy, and then they can get radiation therapy. So I would recommend to you all that help is available for virtually all of your patients with facial paralysis, somehow or another. Find someone who can do the masseter nerve or do it yourself to reinnervate your patients. Use static slings or ideally the temporalis tendon transfer to maintain neutral resting position for your patients. And this field is changing rapidly and developments are being made all the time. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dr. Knott. We'd also like to thank the University of California, San Francisco School of Medicine for its cooperation in publication of this lecture. For information about upcoming CME conferences presented by the University of California, San Francisco, visit meded.ucsf.edu. And for information about CME conferences around the country, visit our website, audiodigest.org, and click on the Inside Audio Digest tab on your dashboard at the top of the page.